Welcome to the Outward OPC podcast. Outward OPC is a work of the Committee on Home Missions, and it exists to encourage zeal for reaching the lost and to be a tool for the OPC and other Reformed churches to be more effective in reaching people outside the church. You can check out the website at outwardopc.com for articles, videos, and tools to help you and your church be more outward in your ministry. Now on with today's episode. Brad Herzog here for Outward OPC. Today I have Tyler Dietrich with me. Tyler is the church planter and pastor of Light of the Nations OPC Church in Dayton, Ohio. Tyler has been with Light of the Nations since 2020. He was a church planting intern under Brad Pepo, and then the church has particularized in 2022, and he has been called to be the pastor of Light of the Nations. So Tyler, we're glad to have you here today. So when I think about that, you've got quite a range, even factoring in the language barrier in some of these cases, but just thinking about it overall, you've got quite a range of people that you're describing to us that I feel like I would describe as outsiders to Christianity. You didn't give a lot of stories about, you know, people who were frustrated with the church over here and wanted something more reformed. You may have that happening at Light of the Nations, but when we talk about outreach, it seems like the Lord has blessed your opportunity to really start to build relationships, engage outsiders. What has that blessing of interacting with that wide range of people who are, you know, Muslim and ready to confront you about Christianity, who are new to this world and just learning for the first time, you know, you mentioned some Orthodox folks who are wondering what Orthodox means, and then your neighbor who's just hearing the bell and coming in. What has it taught you about communicating gospel and truth to outsiders? You can't just obviously throw up a few buzzwords and say, well, we're Reformed, we're confessional, like, oh, great, that's what I was looking for. Like, you can't do that. So what has it taught you about interacting with outsiders in terms of communication of everyday things up to the gospel and truth? And what has it taught you about trying to be a welcoming people, trying to be a welcoming church, that you can't just assume that the people you're inviting know what's going to go on and how things are going to go? What have you learned? How have you practiced trying to communicate truth and trying to be welcoming to people who aren't accustomed to what you're doing?
Yeah. What a good question. So I know a big part of this has been communicating to our people, even through sermons, even in the midst of, I'm preaching through the book of Acts, just showing how the apostles gave us a form of evangelism, a model for evangelism, which was willing to adjust not its substantial content, but its forms of communication. They were willing to adjust to different people, be they God-fearers or you know, pagans. They were constantly finding new strategies to get the unchanging substance of the gospel to people. So I'm really trying to equip the church to do that. I want our people, and I think our people are pretty good at this, but I want us all to be better at it. Just saying, you know, okay, this typical lingo I would use, it's not going to, sure, I could use it in this setting and it would be clumsy, but it's sharing the gospel. But could we even try to adjust our language, to connect well with people, different kinds of people. So that's been one thing, you know. For instance, I'm a big fan of talking, you know, occasionally using the Ray Comfort kind of evangelism, where, you know, if you meet someone who's saying, "I'm good, I don't, you know, at the end of the day, I get into heaven because my good works outweigh my bad ones," I'm all for bringing out the Ten Commandments there and showing how a person falls short of God's law. But when you're talking with someone, for instance, to a neighbor who doesn't even believe in one God, or that the scriptures have any weight, or that the Ten Commandments are not oppressive, if they think the Ten Commandments are oppressive, at that point, we've got to adjust to share the same substance of the gospel, but in a way that says, I want to show you a narrative, a true narrative that gives sense to your desire for justice and for oppressors to cease, and for good to win out. And I want to show you that actually comes not from some sort of mystic Buddhism or from secularism, but really from Christianity. And when you let go of Christianity because you thought it was right to deconstruct your faith, actually you were letting go of the key to life, the key to a stable life. And so, I've really been trying to help our folks see that sometimes you got to adjust, and I've got to adjust. If I started talking to my next door neighbor about the Ten Commandments, I think that would be fine. But I think that there would be some major dissonance because it's not the wavelength he's thinking on right now. It's not meeting him where he's at. So those might be some more controversial examples, but we've weighed into that.
So when I think about these sort of categories that you have going on in outreach, no doubt there's a few people in your church heavily involved with the Quran Bible study, a few in your church heavily involved with the ESL. You're involved in the neighborhood. At the end of the day, a large portion of your people may come in contact with these outsiders. You want them to come to worship. You hope they visit. They're really outsiders to not only Christianity, but Reformed worship. How are you personally and the leaders and other people who teach and share in these things, how are you helping the congregation get prepared for being welcoming to such a group of outsiders? How are you kind of creating a culture that, Reformed churches, and I don't mean this just the OPC, I mean, Reformed churches can get a little bit tribal. People are out in the world,
right,
and they're not with their friends, and then they come into church and they can't wait to talk about the newest Reformed theological debate or ask people that they meet, what do you think of this? Or, what kind of homeschooling curriculum do you use? Or what's your church background? All kinds of things that could threaten people who are such outsiders to this. Are you thinking about how and what are you doing to help the broader congregation sort of be prepared for, hey, we're seeing the Lord bless these outreach opportunities, and we may come to the point where we've got some people in here who are not like us, and we want to love them, and we want to welcome them, and we want to realize that they're in our midst, and we can't just, be a little click over here or tribal about. How are you thinking about that, and what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, so much of that comes from the preaching and teaching that we bring to the people. The book of Acts, the book of Luke, those weren't coincidental that we chose. It wasn't coincidental that we chose to start with Luke, for instance, and then move to Acts. We could have started with John. John, without a doubt, would have blessed the people. But we noticed that Luke had this particular bent towards the outsider. And we noticed that Acts really follows up on that and has themes of hospitality to the one who is outside, who's now being invited in. And so, and along the way, we're going to get to preach. We're not just going to preach on that as a hobby horse, because there's going to be sermons where we're challenged to be, it's God's word, we're going to be challenged to see Christ for who he is and to hold to the truths that are non-negotiable and to stand up even when it makes us look like outsiders. And so, but we chose those books because we saw there was a unique opportunity, perhaps because of Luke's Gentile context, to speak to some of these things that we want to have just sturdy in the beginning stages of our church. The other thing that's really helped has been getting our congregation in on some of these things, just so that they're part of the lives of people who are refugees. We had a wedding in which the wedding was officiated in Spanish. And some people who are regular attendees of our church, not members yet, but moving closer to that, they kindly invited a lot of people to their wedding from our church. And so that just makes our church feel like, wow, we're really part of these lives. And then alongside of my reminders from the pulpit, you were outsiders too. This is you. Friends, you are refugees who have come to a home in Christ. I think it's connecting with people. I really do. But that's the ongoing challenge, that we wouldn't forget it. Our name is there in part to remind us that this is something that we must never forget. And we want this to go on for generations and in the ministry of our church. hopefully that helps. Those are some of the ways.
Yeah, if I could just follow up on that. I noticed, I took a quick look at the website the other day, your website, Light of the Nations website the other day. And I always like doing that. I don't take long because I want to get an impression. And I noticed a couple things that stood out to me that are kind of on this topic of welcoming that maybe you can comment on, and maybe it opens the door to kind of how you do things on Sundays. I noticed some combinations of words that aren't often on our Reform websites. You describe the worship as traditional and joy-filled. Now, I understand, we all understand that it would be great if those go together, but we often don't think of it that way. I noticed you used a description of vibrant in there. And I noticed, here's the big one that stood out to me. There's a little series of frequently asked questions for people there. The first question is, what door should I enter in the building? And that stood out to me. That told me, hey, whoever's putting this website together and whoever's thinking about it is thinking in a way that not all Reformed churches naturally immediately think about. They all want to. Every Reformed church wants to think that way. But your first question is, what door do I enter? And I wonder if that intentionality is a little encapsulation of what Sunday also looks like for you guys. When you, and if you have other officers or other people leading worship, are you also kind of ushering people into this new world? Are you making descriptions of things so that people are more familiar, especially once you have these new people coming in? Like your neighbor rolls out of bed, hears the bell ring, comes into worship. How do you guys, even as leaders, help him understand what's taking place in that hour and a half or hour and 15 minutes?
Right. What a good question. I mean, in some ways, you're asking a question that I've been convicted recently. We could even perhaps do better in. But and by the way, I noticed that at OPC Church in Springfield, Ohio, Living Water, what they had is they kept their dialogical principle of worship and their liturgy, of course. But I noticed that their bulletin had explanations for what each of the parts of worship were. And I've been thinking about that. Maybe, you know, like you're explaining, along the similar vein of what door do I enter? What's going on? What's happening here? We can maybe even get something before people's eyes, perhaps in a variety of languages that would help them. One of the things that you do see that we have right now is, first of all, we do have sermon notes in Spanish that we hand out to people. So that's one of the ways we try to make things easier. The other thing, and you know, just more understandable. The other thing that I do is I really try to not use the loaded theological jargon, which I wholeheartedly believe, like, you know, justification, sanctification. I'll try to say things like being right with God, you know, being at peace with God, having a right relationship with God. I know a lot of OPC pastors have been thinking along that wavelength recently. I think we just kind of have to go maybe the extra mile because of where we are and who we are. I know that, for instance, during the Lord's Supper and baptism, if I just read the Book of Church Order, a lot of people would be very confused. I love the provision in there that we can explain it in terms that are equivalent. And I take full advantage of that. I'll look out there and try just in this warm way that doesn't make people, like, I look out there, I'll see my neighbor, he probably hasn't ever seen a baptism. And I'll try to, in that moment, I'm thinking, okay, I didn't expect them to be here today, so I'm going to have to say this a bit differently. And I'll say, when you see water, what does water make you think of, right? Cleanliness. You know, it's the stuff you get on yourself when you're taking a shower, right? And so I'll start in that, you know, not up in the clouds way, but trying to start, and then I bring it up into something to show that, well, this is holy, this is sacred. What we mean, this is water set apart for something really special. And so that's the kind of thing that we're intentionally trying to go on above and beyond to do.
It sounds like, I don't know you well. We've met once before at a church planter conference. I know Brad Pepo a little bit more than I know you. I'm wondering, what's your background that leads you to being a church planter? And the reason I'm asking that is not just a generic question, but thinking about being in a situation in Dayton where you're in a city where these refugees are coming in. It seems like the Lord has brought through Brad's early work and then you coming in as a church planting intern and now the called to be the pastor there. It seems like the Lord's bringing some unique opportunities. Wondering what your church and theological background is and if this is something that you kind of expected to be in a church planting situation in a Reformed church, if it caught you off guard, just like how do you interact? You're in the middle of it every day. And so it becomes normal life mm-hmm. for you. I guess I'm trying to pull you back for a second and look at it from the perspective of OPC members and people who listen to this and say, wow, like there's not a lot of Reformed churches that are having this kind of doors open and the Lord blessing these kind of opportunities. What was your background that kind of brought you into that? And how is it kind of changing you and shaping you as a young pastor of this congregation?
Sure. Well, first of all, everyone knows Pastor Brad. And I love that. I think it should be that way. He's a dear brother. But to put myself out there just a little bit more, as you requested, yeah, so I grew up in a Lutheran church. I was taught the gospel in that Lutheran church, but moving from Lutheran to Reformed took some translating, you know, some language learning, some unpacking of words that I didn't understand. So I'm sure that has something to do with it. But probably the most impactful thing for me was my time as an English major at Cedarville University. I love literature. I'm a guy who loves fiction, good fiction. And what I love about fiction, my quick pitch for why I think pastors should read good fiction is because it gives you empathy and teaches you how to put yourself in other people's shoes. I've learned that my time deciphering, you know, English literature really got me into that realm where, you know, I had to put myself in another world, you know, connect myself to another person, you know, try to understand through the lens of a fictional character even. And, you know, Dostoevsky, he's one of my favorite authors. He's all about that. He's all about just like letting his characters not be forced, but ring true with certain personalities. And so for me, when I'm doing church planting, I'm not talking about fiction. I know that, but I'm talking about bridging worlds, you know, taking people who are over here, you know, outside the gospel or, you know, and finding a way to get them to connect. In some ways, it's practicing that empathy, just like, you know, looking out there and saying, man, I'm not seeing a connection on that person's face, or, you know, this person, you know, they're so outside the world that we've established, you know, how do I open a door for them to peek in? I mean, in some ways, my English literature upbringing has trained me for that. Yeah, maybe that's the most helpful way to answer that question.
What a fascinating and unexpected answer. I'm glad I asked the question. I liked hearing that. I will have a follow. I could probably talk to you for about 30 minutes on that, but I'm not going to. I'm going to ask one follow-up question.
Okay.
Literature and fiction, along with what you said about entering other worlds and empathy and putting you in other people's shoes, it also wires story deep into your heart. The idea that, you know, as Reformed people, we love logic, we love theology, we love discussion, we love debate. Fiction loves connecting you to a story. I wonder if that also has helped you in being a preacher and communicating to people who are outsiders. Yes, you know the language. Yes, you know the logic. Yes, you know the theology. Has it also maybe you haven't thought about it a lot. Has it naturally woven in there that you know people are most wired to connect to a story, even if data and numbers and ideas are connected to it? Have you ever thought about that much?
Yeah. No, I think that's right on. I think that's another big part of this. One way where I've seen it really tangibly pull its weight is even in my sermon prep. For instance, I used to think along the lines of, what's the main propositional point? I don't have a problem with that, by the way, and I often try to arrive at one. But what's been given more weight to me recently is not what's the main propositional point, but what's the definite spiritual impression, right? What's the storyline that's connected to you as the sermon unfolds? And I want people to be brought into a story. You know, if they walk away saying, I learned something new today, here's the proposition the pastor shared, well, that's good and well. The Holy Spirit certainly used that. But I'm trying to think more in terms of what world does this text bring you into that was totally different than the way you were living before? And that, you know, it's going to do that in different ways for different folks. But I'm looking out, I'm thinking, okay, who's here? What's their storyline? And how does this story collide with theirs to offer them something much better and beautiful? And how can I really, you know, with the 30 minutes I have to preach, how can that story really, you know, wrap around them and pull them in with this warm invitation? You know, taste and see that the Lord is good, that kind of thing. And so, you know, step into the story for a moment. See how glorious this is. Don't you want that? Don't you want that in Christ? And so, that's a big part of my preaching has become, you know, some Sundays I don't even have a main propositional point anymore. But I always have a definite spiritual impression. I want people to walk away just, you know, seeing the thrust of a storyline, the beauty of a storyline in the gospel.
Yeah, I like that. I'll avoid my propensity to want to go for another 45 minutes on that. We'll save that to some other time. And for the benefit of for the benefit of hearers, I have one or two more questions for you before we wrap up. So Tyler, if we could just shift gears a little bit, I'd like to talk about, are you married with a family?
Yes, I am. I have wonderful wife, Natalie, and then two kids, have a three-year-old named Fraser and a one-year-old named Lewis.
Could you talk a little bit about, I'm thinking about listeners who may be in your shoes as well, thinking, you know, particularly of church planters, but also officers and even members of a church. Your family moved into Dayton, moved into what you described as the sort of refugee corridor of Dayton. So it's not just run-of-the-mill town, city. What's it been like for your family coming in and supporting and being a part of this? What's it been like for your kids as you realize that you're living with a lot of Ukrainians and a lot of Hispanics who don't speak English? Have they been exposed to this? And what's it been like as a church planter who's also bringing a family along to be missionaries in Dayton?
Yeah. And, you know, the way that you described us as missionaries in Dayton, at first honestly, it wasn't until this year that I really thought that way. I knew it in, you know, kind of in a backdoor kind of way, but I think we're still missionaries in Dayton, and I fully own that. There's a few things that's really shown that. First of all, I think it's wonderful that my sons and wife, you know, and myself are constantly exposed to things that I just wasn't growing up, be it language barriers, or be it homelessness, or, you know, a drug addiction that we see right outside our streets. You know, my son asked me the other day, why is that man so angry? And it was one of our, not our neighbors, but in a way, one of our neighbors, right? A homeless man who was running down the street, and he was on a meth rage. And I was able to tell my son about this. And it wasn't something I wanted to shelter him from. I wanted him to see it from a distance, but it was good. And on a similar level, you know, different languages, you know, language barriers, that's something I really want my sons to be exposed to. I think that'll be good for them. The realities of inner city, refugee style living, it reminds us that awkwardness is not something to always be avoided. It's something that's important. Sometimes you just, for the sake of the gospel, have to embrace that awkwardness. And so I think that that's good for my boys. But I will be honest, it's not easy. You know, for instance, living in the city, our house has had some issues with lead paint, and that's a universal Dayton problem. And it's been really hard for us because one of my sons tested kind of high, and so now it's been a matter of bringing it down. And then also, you know, my wife has told me she doesn't feel that she can just take the boys and go for a walk around the neighborhood without me present or without someone else with her. It's just that kind of a setting. Those are sacrifices. We feel those acutely, but we also think that they're really worth it, that if we were to flee this, we would really have to have a solid, solid reason to do so. And that sometimes difficult, awkward things and adjustments are worth it for the sake of the gospel.
Did you and your wife know that coming in, or did it become a reality once you were kind of moved in and on the ground? Like, what was that dynamic like?
We knew a little bit, but We didn't know it like this.
Yeah, like, right? Like most things, you have the concept and then you have the reality.
Yeah, so it's really, over the past 2 years, been impressed upon us. Wow, you know, Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. So it's been kind of like that, but also it's been amazing to see the neighbors see this in us and really, really take an interest. I mean, there's one neighbor who said to me, you know, you guys really intrigue me. What is it like? What is it with you guys? And I'm able to just say, you know, we're weird people, for starters. you might just camp out on that. But I said, I'd really invite you to camp out a bit further. I think Jesus has changed us. And just telling him, you know, a lot of the things everything we do is because of Christ. And so inviting him, you know, if he considers us interesting people, and if that's in the direction of, whatever's worthy of that, please see Jesus in that.
Yeah, that's great. Also think another question, thinking about kind of the listeners and some of your colleagues who are church planters and pastors in churches outreach efforts are in very different leagues or very different categories, let's say. In other words, not everybody has a Quran Bible study going on. Not everybody has a burgeoning ESL. The Lord has blessed you guys with that through whatever means, and that's been great. What are your thoughts, or how would you encourage, if you could imagine that you're, you know, at the Church Planter Training Conference again, or just knowing that a lot of your fellow church planters in the OPC will listen to this, for those maybe slugging away a little bit more and a little bit more in the mundane, have a desire, want to see the Lord bless their efforts, but they maybe haven't seen these types of ministry opportunities open the way Light of the Nations has. What kind of thoughts, what kind of encouragement, what kind of advice might you give them, knowing that the Lord has put you in a unique place and blessed it, and that doesn't really have to do with you and even Brad Pepo. It has more to do with what he has chosen to do, and your fellow colleagues are wondering how to go about the day-to-day of outreach and cutting out times and places and not getting frustrated and discouraged. Any thoughts as I just kind of bring that topic up off the cuff?
Yeah. I think just off the cuff, I would say, you know, I've learned anything over the past 3 years of ministry, it's been that, you know, I can't build Jesus's church, only he can. And, you know, there can be this frustration with, you know, why isn't there something like that right in front of me? But my first suggestion is, well, maybe there is, you know, take a closer look. Maybe there is something outside the box that really suits you to connect with your neighbors. But even if you're saying, you know, there's nothing flashy here. Well, once again, you know, we can look to flashy things because we think they're going to build the church, but it's really Christ who builds the church. He's working through mundane things every day. I mean, I've been going through the Book of Acts. Some of the stuff in there, some of the conversions are through very flashy, kind of exciting modes, like a demon possessed woman being purged of that spirit. But then you'll also see a conversion like Lydia, right? She's just a wealthy woman who's praying on the riverside, and she hears the gospel. She hears the good news. So I think that the Lord works through the more mundane, and he works through the extraordinary. And I would just counsel you just to be at the work, whatever it is, even if it's equipping your people, just to start to look at their ordinary lives and their connections, and the woman at the grocery store, and the homeless man, the one homeless guy in your neighborhood. Look on those as opportunities. Yes, mundane, but no, nonetheless supernatural opportunities. I think that's my takeaway that I would really encourage you with.
Yeah, that first answer of looking a little more closely outside the box reminds me, just I'll say it for the hearer's benefits, reminds me that there's a lot of stories floating around in like church planter training conference and things like that, where pastors at first didn't see certain opportunities and then realized that even some of their own just interests in life. I know that one church planter had an interest in jiu-jitsu, I think it was, and some training, and he ended up meeting some people at the class, and then he ended up having like a Bible study and a jiu-jitsu training, and I know we had another church planter in the OPC that enjoyed some gaming and board games, and he ended up gathering a group of people around that ended up being people that he just loved and had hospitality with, some of whom came to the church. So that's a good reminder for people that sometimes looking at the way you think it should happen to provide an outreach opportunity, you need to take a closer look and say, is there something outside the box here that I haven't thought of? So I appreciate you you sharing that as well.
Yeah, and honestly, if you are a pastor that lives in the city or who lives in an area that has a neighborhood association, I just can't highly enough recommend trying to be involved in that. It's a big deal for me and my family that we know our neighbors and that they know us and that they have a sense as to who we are. And there was already an infrastructure for that. We didn't have to create it. There was already a neighborhood association meeting. And, you know, my advice is, go ahead, be the outlier in that neighborhood meeting. Be the pastor that everyone, you know, might feel a little awkward being there, but they'll come to see your love.
Yeah, Tyler, what's the one favorite thing that's happened in your time at Light of the Nations, particularly in regard to outreach and the Lord opening a door? What's the story that, as of right now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, your grandkids say, what was it like being a pastor in Dayton all that time ago? What's the one thing so far that is your favorite thing that's happened in terms of a door opening or a person that you were able to minister to or continuing to minister to? What's the one story you would tell?
Well, you know, it's hard to beat that bell story of my neighbor who came to church because of the bell, hearing the bell. I think that's the most tangible story of God's providence in all this. But I would, I think the one that's really gripped my heart the most has been the conversion of a mother and her two daughters. So we had three adult baptisms, you know, three conversions and three adult baptisms in 1 month. And just saying, wow, the Lord really does do this. You know, their story was not, you know, it wasn't like they grew up in utter paganism. They just grew up in a very stunted presentation of what the good news was, and they walked away from it, and they didn't offer this to their children. But then it was amazing. It was amazing to see the Lord break through, and just going from, hey, I'm not sure Jesus is the only way, to, wait, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Jesus is the only way of salvation. So then I want to be baptized. I want that. I want my story. I can't imagine my story and Christ's story not being together. That one was amazing.
That's a great way to end. This has been great, Tyler. We really appreciate you sharing the details of the outreach and the stories. I think people will be really blessed. And thanks for taking your time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brad.
That's it for today's episode. You can go to the website at outwardopc.com to check out more resources. And you can sign up for our email list where you will receive notifications when new things are available. Until then, we'll see you next episode.